Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Everybody, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Charles Smith. Charles is an Army veteran who has learned to survive a series of traumas that he's experienced throughout his life. He's also the author of several self-help books that come from his own experiences throughout his life. And he's here today to talk about some of those experiences, how he navigated through those experiences, and how he's currently helping out veterans find better ways of coping with the issues that they're facing. So welcome to the show, Charles. I'm glad to have you here.
Glad to be here, Scott. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. So over the years of doing this podcast, I've learned that oftentimes the issues that we face as adults, they sometimes start off way back when we were kids through things that we've dealt with. Sometimes there's unresolved trauma from a childhood experience or a loss of a loved one or any number of other things that, quite frankly, as kids, we were just not equipped to deal with in healthy ways without the right support system in place and the right tools available to us. So would you mind telling us a little bit about your childhood experiences and kind of start us off there so we kind of have a better idea of, you know, who you were and what led you to where you ended up?
Yeah, sure. My childhood started out, I was supposed to have a legacy. My father owned multiple nursing homes and land all around the Worcester, or you guys would probably say Worcester, Massachusetts area. And he lost it all in one day, it seemed. And my grandfather had to build a duplex for us to live in. But shortly after that, my mother passed away of drugs and alcohol. And after that, my father moved me and my sister around to Texas, Arizona. I lived in a Navajo reservation in Arizona. I lived on the border of Mexico in a small town called Van Horn, Texas. And it was literally 10 homes in 11 years, which is one of my books that I wrote. And in Texas, my father actually passed away. I remember we lived in a dirt poor house. Like, I remember having one full bed that me and my father slept in. And I was 11 years old at the time. We didn't have a box spring, just a mattress. Our clothes were in cardboard boxes. We just had enough food to survive. And I remember one night, the last day we were there, I woke up, I looked at my father, and I had this eerie feeling come over me. I got up, I went to my father, I hugged him, and I said, "Dad, I want to stay home from school." He said, "No, you can't. You've already missed too much school, because I could go to school whenever I wanted to, or stay home whenever I wanted to." And after that, I went into the bathroom, shoved my finger down my throat, and I went back and told him, "Hey, look, I just threw up. I don't feel good. I want to stay home." So he let me stay home. After we dropped my sister off at school, we went to the store, and he passed out on me in the store. He was a bad diabetic, and the store clerk knew him. Give him orange juice to revive him. And then we got home. Shortly after we got home, he passed out on me again. I ran out of the house to get my neighbor. And my neighbor and I got him into my neighbor's car and got him to the hospital, local hospital. And that's where he passed away, holding my hand. And then we came back here to Worcester, Massachusetts.
Yeah. First off, 10 houses in 11 years. I mean, I know a lot of times military families, you know, especially the people who might be listening to this podcast, they move around a lot. Yep. And so that is kind of a common thing. But one thing that I think a lot of military families, and in this case, you were not a military family. This was just moving from place to place, all over the place, different states, different locations. One thing that military families have going for them is other military families. They all kind of know what they're getting into, and that there's that support network there. But when you move from Massachusetts to some other state in, you know, Arizona, Texas, and all these other places that you're moving to, you know, there, you don't have the roots there. And, you know, I would imagine you probably didn't have family in all of these places either. And so, so going to all these different places, you're kind of just, you know, almost nomadic. You don't have your roots settled down. It's probably harder to make and keep friends, you know, especially back then. You know, it's not like we have social media or email or anything like that where you could hop on that and stay in touch with people, but that's got to be pretty hard. But then losing both of your parents at such an early age and dealing with all that, I mean, that just has to be difficult for any child, you know, regardless of anything else that's going on in their lives. Just losing a parent at a young age is traumatic, but losing both, you know, you said what, age 11?
Age 11, yes. Yep.
That's pretty rough. And so, you know, what was life like after that, after you lost your father?
Well, when I was writing 10 Homes in 11 Years, I was talking to my sister because I actually blocked out a lot of my childhood. And she told me that I was a mute for 6 months. I totally forgot about that.
Wow.
But when I first came home, she said I didn't even talk to her. I wouldn't talk to anybody for like 6 months. And growing up, like anyone that tried to be my parent, I didn't want any part of them. You know, me and a couple of my childhood friends just went up to see another friend up in Vermont. He's passing away of cancer, but now he's bedridden and he don't have much time left. But I asked one of my friends that we drove up with, like, how was I when I was growing up? It's like, you were looking for family. And we were that family. You know, and so it was really profound, you know, the brotherhood that we had. It was like the military.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it. And, you know, part of the story sounds like you know, and I say story, not like this is some make-believe kind of thing, but it's, you know, part of your story and your background, you know, it sounds to me like, you know, everyone needs a family. That's just one of the basics. I mean, that people, whether they're blood related or whatever, they need people around them to talk to care about, to look after and have them look after you and all that kind of stuff. You just kind of need people around you. It's one of those just basics, I think, that most people really need. But at the same time, when you're at such a young age and the people who you love are seem like they're leaving you, right? It probably felt like, well, you don't want to get too close to anybody, because if you do, then you're just going to suffer that same kind of heartbreak again at some point.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could totally see how when you said, you know, you're kind of pushing people away who were trying to be like a parent figure. Like, I get that. Like, that it hasn't happened to me, but I understand why that might happen, because, like, why would you want someone to get that close to you just to, you know, have your heart broken all over again, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine today, and I lost over 20 significant people in my life. Death wise,
yeah.
like this, my friend is going to be like the first sibling, you know, because we're like brothers. But I've lost my parents, I've lost my uncle, my grandfather, three sets of grandfathers and grandmothers, because my uncle who raised me, his mother and father were like my grandparents. The list just goes on and on. And
right,
I can tell you from experience, it doesn't get any easier.
No, and that's one thing about grief is it it's never easy to,
yeah.
to lose a loved one, you know, especially someone that, that you care about and that you grew up around and all that kind of stuff. It's never easy. But I think also if you don't learn how to grieve in a healthy, proper way, and grief mm-hmm. looks different for everybody. So I can't say that there's like one checklist, like do all these things and you'll be good to go. But
yeah,
if you don't right. learn to grieve in a healthy way, the next time grief comes around, it's just going to compound itself and you're just not going to be able to handle it very well. Right. And it seems yeah. like that's what happened in your case, right?
It is. Yeah. Yep. And I actually talk about that in my latest book, Acceptance of a Lost One. Acceptance yeah, of a losing a loved one, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, ultimately you ended up joining the military. So far all this yes. stuff is pre-military. What was yep. the prompt for you to join the military?
Well, I got into drugs and alcohol, and it was enough for it was ruining my life. And my aunt that I lived with told me, get out, get a job, and don't come back, mm-hmm. which is what I needed at that time. You know? And so I went out, I joined the military. I told her that I'll be gone in a month. Joining the military, and then that was my detox pretty much.
Yeah, what was that like, you know, going from, you know, someone who was using drugs, alcohol and stuff, and then being away from all those negative influences in your life? What was that? I mean, I know basic training is difficult enough for some people, but then adding that on top of it could be just so traumatic too.
Yeah, it was hard because I was so skinny from using crack cocaine. And so passing the PT tests and all that was extremely hard. They fed me more than the normal soldier. But then again, I don't know if you were in or not. Were you in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. That was, yeah, infantry.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yep. You know, the platoon leader is done. We're all done. Yeah.
Right.
And so it didn't matter how much they gave me. Once he was done, I was done eating. So I just ate as much as I could, as quick as I could. And then I bulked up and I had this guy Hull that pushed me every night when we were done with everything. You know, he pushed me to do push-ups and sit-ups, and he's the one that got me to basic training.
Well, and that's good, too, because you had that support. Again, you know, going back,
yeah.
kind of like a common theme is like having that support system in place and, you know, just going through it alone, all on your own, not really knowing anyone, not really having that system in place. You know, it's good to have those people around who are there to encourage and motivate you to keep pushing forward and not quitting on yourself, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Do you feel like the military experience overall changed your outlook on life in terms of, you know, where you were before joining the military and in terms of like resiliency or anything like that? Or were you, you know, kind of keeping some of that same mindset and attitude throughout the military career?
I think it built my resiliency for sure. But I also think that there was a lot of lingering things going on in my head.
Right.
You know, like I wasn't totally, there was one missing aspect that I didn't experience yet that I needed to experience. Yeah, and that came a few years later.
And so what was that? And what was that experience like?
That was my grandfather and my uncle passed away a month apart in the year 2000. And I became like really darkly depressed. So depressed that I was cutting on myself. And I carved the words, "fuck you world," in my arms. And I took a bottle of sleeping pills. And I tried taking my own life. I was done. And with that, I became a homeless veteran, and I've seen the other veterans that were suffering like I was. You know, and that is what changed me. What I've seen that I'm not alone, and I've seen that there's so many people out there suffering that needed my support.
And that's an interesting segue into what came next. But, you know, I hear you saying how here you are suffering. You're in this dark, depressed state, and you're homeless. That's not an easy time for anyone, veteran or not, being homeless, right?
All right.
And then you're seeing all these other homeless veterans around you, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, these people need some help. They're the ones who I need to help, right? And
yeah.
And you know, I think that sort of ties back to a lot of people's military services is how we find something bigger than ourselves to serve. You know, some people go to serve their country, to support their communities, and you know, maybe it's the National Guard or something like that. You know, it's something bigger than themselves, and they are willing to sacrifice something of themselves. They're willing to put in that extra effort because it's like, well, somebody else is relying on me to do this. And if I don't, this person's going to be in a bad shape. So I got to do my best to help that person out. So
right.
You know, that's sort of what I'm hearing from you on your side, as far as like what your experience was through all of this, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely.
And so yeah, you know, I'm glad that, you know, obviously glad that things worked out for you, that you're still with us here to share your story. You know, unfortunately, it is not all that uncommon where veterans deal with suicide attempts. And I think your story and homelessness for that matter, but in your story, I think can serve as an inspiration to those other people who are struggling, feeling like they're all alone. Like it's just them against the world and they got nothing left to live for and all that kind of stuff. So I think stories like yours and you, I think the world is a better place with you in it to be able to share those stories. And, you know, yeah, you did have to go through some crap to hit that point where you're like, okay, something's got to change. Right.
Yeah,
and then you hit that turning point where you decided to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and basically play the hand that you're dealt. Right.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
I think that everybody has a crucible in their life, you know, and it either makes you or breaks you. And I think that moment in my life was my crucible. You know, and the thing about my suicide attempt that I tell people is that was 20 years ago. I have a 10-year-old son now. You do the math.
Right.
You know, if I ended up killing myself, not only would I not be here, but he wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be a 7-time author. My story wouldn't be told. I wouldn't be on Drive On podcast. You know, the story, I mean, the list goes on and on of things that wouldn't be happening if I ended up doing what I was doing. You know, I wouldn't be working for one of the greatest companies that I've ever worked for in my life. Aware recovery care. You know, it's
exactly
it's amazing.
There's so many things that can turn around just with the right mindset, the right attitude, the right energy going towards the right things, right? Not going towards the negative things, the drugs, the alcohol, the stuff that is going to send you down the wrong path, but with the right mindset and the right energy going towards the healthy things in your life. Exactly like you said, so many things have turned around and are better now that you've focused on those things. Like you have a son that child would not be here if you succeeded in that attempt. Back then, you know? And so when you think about that, like there's all these, what does the future hold for me? It's like this, there is a big mystery as far as what the future holds, but if you're putting the right energy and the right mindset in place, that future can be a good future, no matter what you've dealt with. Right.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have traumatic events in their life my life was a traumatic event.
Yeah.
You know, but still, yeah, I'm pushing on, I'm pushing forward, and I'm making something of it. You know, and then that's what we all need to do. We all need, especially in these dark times that we're in now, we all need to, you know, not give up hope, keep pushing forward, drive on.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. And that's how you end up finding that inner peace and not being so down on yourself and depressed and thinking that the world's out to get you or whatever. And you had, I'm just going to be frank with you, you've had a shitty hand dealt to you, you know?
Like, I have.
All that stuff like going on, a lot of that was pretty shitty, especially at a early age, you know, having to deal with all that kind of stuff. I mean, that no one really should have to deal with that, but here you are. Once when you're dealt that hand, you got to play it. You have to figure out what the next best move is. It may not be a great move. It may not be like leapfrogging from, you know, poverty to millionaire status or anything like that. Right.
But
you're looking to like every day, just get yourself a little bit better than you were the day before. And that means you're at least moving in the right direction. And if you can survive all of those bad days, all those miserable, terrible days that have happened in your past, and if you're consistently making an effort to have a better future, better life, the days in the future, you'll be able to handle those. You know, no matter what comes your way, you'll be able to handle that. And I think, you know, your story is certainly an inspiration in terms of, you know, the your ability to bounce back from literally that rock bottom moment that you had, right?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I've had a lot happen that we didn't even talk about, you know, and
sure.
Like what got me into working in addiction recovery, my cousin in 2016, he was into heroin and he went missing on July 4th of July in Worcester. And he was missing for 6 months. And then on the New Year's Eve, I think it was, a hunter and his dog found his body in the woods. And they had to do dental recognition to identify his body. And there was lime around his body. You know, and after that, I dedicated my life to helping people, veterans and civilians alike, with addiction recovery.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about the addiction recovery side of things and what you're doing now to help people out with all that.
Yeah. Okay.
So tell us about that.
Now I'm working with Aware Recovery Care, and it offers a novel in-home drug and alcohol treatment program for people. And we're like a first of our kind, and we're in multiple states. We're in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Connecticut, Florida, and we're trying to get into other states, Maine. But what we do is we meet the client where we're at. Like, if you want to go out for a coffee and talk about your recovery, we go out for a coffee and talk about your recovery at home, on break, for lunch, whatever. Yep. Or go to an AA meeting with the client, whatever they want to do. And we have like a set of criteria that we teach the client to help them more in their recovery. And we have the client for a whole year, which is phenomenal, because I've worked in detoxes and CSS and places that I never thought I had enough time with the client. You know, like a detox, I have like a week, maybe two. Mm-hmm. And then you let the client go knowing that they might die or you might see them back in a week. You know, here we have the client for a whole year, and our stats are just phenomenal compared to a lot of the other places, even AA. You know, so.
Right. And that's a really good alternative here, because like you said, there's other organizations, other people who will work with people, but for a week or two, that really isn't going to cut it for most people, I would think, you know. And when you have a whole year, and perhaps even a whole year might not be enough for certain people, but at least you're getting those people to a much better place than they were before, probably to a place where it's manageable for them at that point, where they can go on and be able to handle this without dealing with all the issues that they were dealing with a year earlier, right?
Yeah, yeah. And now we're accredited with the Joint Commission, and there were a whole bunch of stuff that they just sent me. We have the Golden Seal of Approval, and we were actually, somebody from Yale helped to create this organization. So we had a lot of brain power behind what we were doing.
Yeah. And having more people around who have different perspectives, different experiences, different things that they bring to the table, is just going to create a better organization, a better service that you're offering to people. So it sounds great. So Aware Recovery Care, and I'll have links to this in the show notes as well. So people who are, you know, struggling with addiction and, you know, needing some help, thinking that they've tried everything,
but
this might sound like something that could be beneficial for them, they can find the links in the show notes pretty easily. So I'm glad that you mentioned that and brought up all of this stuff. But
yeah, we're also at Maine, New Hampshire, Connecticut, and Florida.
Okay. Absolutely. In Massachusetts, right. And I'll put that in the show notes as well. Yeah. And if, you know, over time, as you add new states, we can always update those show notes too, so people can find that in their area. But
thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I want to talk about your books too. Okay. And I know a lot of them are focused on your experiences, your background, and the things that you've gone through, but they're all geared around, like you were saying before, helping out other people, the self-help books. And I think one of the best ways to help other people is to share experiences. And that seems like exactly what you're doing with these books. So tell us a little bit about the books and where people can go to find them.
All right. Well, most of them are self-help workbooks. I have people really think about what they're reading and then write down answers to a bunch of different questions within the books. And I have a book on addiction recovery. I have a book on PTSD. I explain my history of PTSD within that book. I have a book on positive thinking, mindfulness. I have a book on acceptance, the loss of a loved one, which a lot of people need that right now because of COVID and everything else, definitely. And I have a book on self-protection, a lot of which I learned in the military in Cuba. I was in Cuba for 6 months guarding the camps, and then a lot of experiences that I had being a private investigator, and that the list goes on and on again.
Sure. Yeah. And I can imagine all of those experiences have their own stories that we could probably do a whole separate episode on. Right. So,
right. Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, I mean, all these books, I mean, there's so many different topics here. And again, people who are looking to get the help that they need for any of these things, whether it's addiction or PTSD or, you know, grief from the loss of a loved one or whatever the issues are that they're dealing with. Sometimes it's just hearing someone else's perspective and be like, yeah, you know what? That sounds kind of like me and what I've been going through. Why don't I try what this guy has tried and see how that goes for me? And
exactly.
Go from there, right?
Yeah. I mean, coping skills, what works for me might not work for you, but it's a place to start. You know, like my coping skills are meditation, yoga, martial arts, that sort of thing. And, you know, yoga and meditation are two of the most common coping skills. It helps a lot of people. So people might want to start with those. But like my addiction recovery book has the eight dimensions of wellness. And within all the eight dimensions of wellness, there's coping skills for each. So it goes really deep into each dimension of wellness, like emotional wellness, physical wellness, intellectual wellness, soul wellness, all that. So even if you're not into addiction, even if you're not in recovery or using at that time, it's still a good read.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like you said, there are different things that work for different people. The things that work for you, you know, yoga and martial arts and the exercise, the physical type things may not work for everybody. Some people may be more geared towards doing things like artwork or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
No, yeah, in a way that's physical, but it's also mental. It's also, it uses different parts of your body, different, you know, parts of your brain. And for some people, it just works differently. But I think
it's emotional.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you hit on a key point is that you got to start somewhere and you have to try something. And if you've tried everything, as far as you're concerned, like you think you've tried everything, keep looking, try something else. Just keep trying because none of that stuff is, in my book, it's not a failure as far as I'm concerned. You've tried martial arts, but that wasn't for you. It's like, oh, okay, well, I failed at that now too, right? Well, no, you didn't fail at it. You just found one more thing that doesn't work. Now you can scratch that off the list. You can move on and try something new, right? You don't have to waste your time doing martial arts or artwork or whatever the thing is that you tried and didn't work for you. Cool. Now you've just discovered one thing that doesn't work for you. Now you can move on and try something else. That's the way I look at it is just keep trying. Don't have a give up, you know, throw in the towel kind of mindset. Have a more positive mindset that says, okay, well, there's something else out there. I just haven't found it yet.
Yeah. As long as you're learning something, there's never a failure.
Right.
You know, it's just one more thing that you learned in life. You know, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So where can people go to get your books? Is there a website where they're all at, or are they mostly on like Amazon, things like that?
LifelongExperience.net. If you go on there, there's a link to everywhere else that they're on, because they're on everywhere.
Okay.
They're on Audible, they're on Amazon, they're on this, they're on that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll have a link to that website as well as the Aware Recovery Care in the show notes so people can find your books for all the different topics that you cover. You know, and I think it's great too that you have shared your experiences from a lot of these parts of your past, the PTSD that you suffered with, the addiction, and also the recovery side of things, the positive thinking, the mindfulness, the things like that too. The ways that you've been able to cope with this stuff going forward is just as important as the rest of it. So I think these books sound like a great thing to have in our toolkit. And I really do encourage everyone who is struggling in one way or another to go check out one or more of these books to see if it might help you out. Because
I appreciate that.
You never know when.
Yeah.
Someone else's experiences and their perspective might just trigger something in your brain that says, oh crap, I didn't even think about that. Right. Or I didn't even think about this way of looking at things or whatever. And now you look at it this way and all of a sudden you're dealing with, you know, a whole new outlook on life. And so, yeah, definitely check those things out. Charles, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. I'm sure we could keep going for quite some time talking about these things, but you know, I want people to get the books and take a look at that as opposed to, you know, hearing all of the nitty gritty details of all of them on here. So go take a look at those books, check them out and help get yourself back on the right track, right?
Absolutely. Thank you, Scott. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Charles. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.